I'm Amanda Johnson. I'm GLAAD Director of Public Affairs and Education. And I want to just start by thanking everybody for joining us for this call today. We really appreciate your interest. We know this is an important decision, and I'm sure that you're interested to hear what Mary and Gary have to say. Mary Bonato is the director of GLAAD Civil Rights Project. And in 2015, she successfully argued before the U.S. Supreme Court in Obergefell v. Hodges, which established the freedom to marry for same-sex couples nationwide. Gary Busick has been with GLAAD in various capacities for more than 35 years and has served as our legal director since 2004 and has been involved in setting legal and policy strategy for GLAAD and a legal expert for other organizations nationwide. Without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Mary and Gary. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. It's Mary here, and I'm going to offer a few thoughts, but stop myself so that Gary can also weigh in as we go along. And I will try, for sure, to address all of the questions that were sent to us in advance. The one asked for essentially what's a pithy way to describe this case. And there's ways in which it's a very ordinary case for someone, this couple who wanted a cake to celebrate their wedding reception in Colorado. They were heading off to Mass to get married. Colorado didn't have marriage at the time. You know, went to the, you know, reputable baker and said, we want a cake for our wedding. And the whole interaction of the baker denying them cake because it was a same-sex marriage. It took about 20 seconds. It was pretty brief, and in many ways the case proceeded in the ways you would expect. You know, the baker is a place of public accommodation. They sell wedding cakes, but refused to make cake here because it was a same-sex couple. And the mom of one of them called, you know, after the fact, say, what was this all about? And he was very clear. This is Mr. Phillips, who really owns Masterpiece Cake Shop with his wife, that it was really based on his religious views. So there was an action, so on and so forth, Colorado Commission, in addition to the Colorado courts, essentially agree that this is discrimination in a place of public accommodation because of sexual orientation, and it is not permissible to do so, and there's no defense based on free speech or being forced to, as the baker put it, having to support and celebrate a same-sex marriage, no religious defense, and, you know, then they tried to get it to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court took a really long time agreeing to take this case, but they finally did. And frankly, there's a lot of ways, given all of the hype, was not a letdown, because I was certainly relieved, but it was not the fireworks that I think some people expected. The bake shop is represented by the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is the largest anti-LGBT organization out there, over a $50 million budget. And in addition, they were supported for the first time ever by the United States Department of Justice, arguing against the enforceability of an anti-discrimination law, which is super disappointing. So given all of those stakes, it was, as you would expect, an enormous relief that the court essentially punted. They did not decide the speech issues and religion issues that had been teed up by the parties. They did not say this is, you know, baking a cake is an exercise of his religion and has to be allowed to do it despite a non-discrimination law. And likewise, with respect to speech, they punted, saying the Colorado Commission was tainted, the proceedings were tainted, because the government is supposed to act neutrally and respectfully when religious concerns are raised, and that was not true here. And I just want to unpack both of these for a minute, and then I'm going to let Gary talk. But first of all, part of why the decision was so much of a relief to many of us is because you have majority opinion plus the dissenting opinion from Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor saying things that we believe are true going forward. For example, that it's unexceptional that Colorado could choose to protect protect gay persons under its anti-discrimination law. With opinions by Justice Kennedy, as you know, there's often a lot of, on the one hand, on the other hand, kind of thinking. And what was really fun to see right at the outset of the opinion is him doing that. This is in Section 2A of the opinion. Justice Kennedy is saying, our society has come to recognize gay couples shouldn't be treated as outcasts or not inferior in dignity and worth. So the Constitution can, and in some cases must, protect gay people in the exercise of their civil rights. This has to be given great respect and weight by the courts. On the other hand, and here he cites his own opinion in Obergefell, you know, people with religious and philosophical objections to marriage by same-sex couples, you know, those are protected views and in some cases protected forms of expression. But then he resolves this back and forth as follows, which is, nevertheless, while those religious and philosophical objections are protected, it is a general rule that such objections do not allow business owners and other actors in the economy and in society to deny or protect persons equal access to goods and services under a neutral and generally applicable public accommodations law. And you see that back and forth a lot in the opinion, but lots of indication of the importance and the validity as a general matter of anti-discrimination laws. And that's some of what I think some of us were concerned would be at risk in this case. So that's all very, very positive. Then we get to, well, how did this case actually turn out in favor of the bake shop and Mr. Phillips rather than, you know, upholding what the Colorado courts have done? And that is where I can't say that I agree with this analysis because I don't. But that is where what the court said is there had not been neutral and respectful consideration of the arguments by the state commission and ultimately by the Colorado Court of Appeals that heard the case. Now, there are some ways in which I do agree. There were comments by commissioners, and the commissioners, of course, work for the government. They are the government. That the court said denigrated religion. You know, at one point, a commissioner in a public hearing called the argument raised by Mr. Phillips despicable rhetoric, that religion had been used to justify things like slavery and the Holocaust. And the court said this was hostility to religion and hostility to belief and not permissible by the government. And frankly, one thing I think some of us need to focus on is talking to our state commission just to be on the same page about these issues going forward, because for sure there's going to be attempts to go at state commissions in states that have non-discrimination laws. But in any event, there was that, and then there was also a more problematic expression by the court that they thought there was a double standard at work, that there was a guy named William Jack who had gone around to Colorado bakeries. Actually, we know he went around to Colorado bakeries. That's not what's stated in the opinion, looking to have bakers bake anti-gay cakes. And these cakes are described in Justice Ginsburg's dissenting opinion. These were cakes that were shaped in the form of a Bible, and one had two messages on different sides. One was God hates sin, and then the other side, God hates sin, homosexuality is a detestable sin. And on the other, there was a picture of two men holding hands with a, you know, red X through it, saying that, you know, God loves sinners and Christ died for sinners. He found three bakeries that would not bake him these cakes, although some others did, and he sued saying this was discrimination based on his religion, and the Colorado Commission said, no, it's not. These bakers would have denied that cake to anyone. It wasn't based on his religion. And I'm going to stop there because we're going to, I think, explore this when we talk a little bit more about the back and forth between Justices Kagan and Gorsuch. But Gary, I want to give you a chance to weigh in here.
Thanks, Mary. Probably just reiterating a few things that Mary just said, but in reading this opinion a couple more times overnight and this morning, one of the things that strikes me is that I think the baker and the people who support the baker, I think, had it wanted a ruling that perhaps would say that religious views trump everything, that that is the most important value and wins the day. And I think one of the amazing things about this opinion is that it's signed by six justices on this opinion, and we can add the two dissenters, Ginsburg and Sotomayor. So we have eight justices who, at least in print, disagree with that. I think the opinion makes a strong point that the rights of gay people to equal protection are equally as important as those religious liberties. Not that those religious liberties aren't intensely important, but that they don't trump these other interests that are equally important. And so when Justice Kennedy says that for about gay people, the exercise of their freedom on terms equal to others must be given great weight and respect by the court, and he talks about stigma that would come from exclusion, I think we are seeing eight justices going on record on a very important point. That makes you wonder, how is the right perceiving this as a victory? And I think the reason is something that we ignore at our peril, because I think this court sees disrespect shown to religion, and comments like the commissioner made about this is like slavery in the Holocaust, which to us makes sense, are really provocative. And to put it in terms that I think we're familiar with when we talk about being attentive to microaggressions on various topics, I think these are microaggressions against religion. And whether that's true or not, that is how they are perceived. And that's how they are perceived by a growing majority of this court. And we have to pay attention to Justices Kagan and Breyer, because this opinion in its result looks a lot like the decision a year ago in a case out of Missouri involving a religious school that applied for a grant for what was called like a scrap tire program that created a safer surface for playgrounds. And Justice Sotomayor in dissent was absolutely right that it was contrary to all existing precedent to allow the church school to participate in that program. But the church won that case 7-2. The first real signal that Kagan and Breyer were paying more attention to nuances of the religion issue. And the alignment yesterday is exactly the same. I mean, in terms of the vote is 7-2, Justice Thomas is in a slightly different position. But it is the same configuration and the same interests at stake. And so I do think that we have to be attentive and engage in that community much more clearly in the future, because our future, I think, is going to depend on it. There is a lot to build on, like I said, in this opinion, but we can't ignore that strain of what is going on in the conversation in the country. Back to you, Mary.
All right, and Gary, thank you for that, because there's a way in which if we had more time, we would actually back up this discussion long before Masterpiece and talk about how sort of different ways of how religious objections to generally applicable laws have been treated, which is in fact super important and very revealing. And I will say that just very, very briefly, and you see this case discussed explicitly in Justice Gorsuch's opinion, there's a lot of anger about a decision from 1990 that appeared to change the law and said, well, if a law is generally applicable, it doesn't matter that it has some incidental burden on religion, as long as, again, it's not targeting people because of their religion. And that has created a lot of frustration. That's part of why we have the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act and so many state laws that are comparable, and it's part of why there's been such an effort, including in this case, to really get the court to reconsider that decision. So why don't I just talk for a minute about the Kagan-Breyer opinion versus the Gorsuch-Alito opinion. So let me just point out a couple of things that I think are some of the highlights and that also suggest some of the things that we're going to see coming down the pike in terms of arguments of people who continue to press for exemptions that is not going to stop. So Justice Kagan, you know, as we've already noted, and Justice Breyer, you know, concurred in this, agreed with the result, and so on the grounds that there was not neutral and respectful consideration of religion. But they disagreed about this other individual and the cakes. This other individual who's looking for the anti-gay cakes. They really think that, and I have to say I agree, that the Colorado Commission and the Colorado Court of Appeals treated that individual like anyone else. If it had been a person of any background, of any faith, the bakers in those cases would not have made particular cakes because they didn't make cakes. As Justice Kagan said, you know, there was a really clear explanation for why, which is those people did not want to make cakes that disparage other people. And by contrast, with Masterpiece, the baker there makes wedding cakes all the time, makes wedding cakes for different sex couples, but just not for same-sex couples. So she thought there was really a difference in this whole idea that we're going to now start looking at basically trying to say there's creedal discrimination working all the time is not the right approach. But Justice Gorsuch took this in a very different direction. And not only on religion, but frankly, he was hinting quite openly about free speech arguments as well. And for him, this isn't what Justice Kagan thought, which is you sell wedding cakes to straight couples and therefore you have to sell them to gay couples. He sees an enormous difference between making a wedding cake, on the one hand, and making a cake that is celebrating a marriage of a same-sex couple. And that is, I think, a line, it may be a fault line, that we're going to continue to see that there's just something different about the cake, and embedded in this idea that there's a difference between a wedding cake and a cake for a same-sex couple is both religion and speech. On the speech side, later in his concurrence, talks about how a wedding cake is like a symbol or a flag and immediately indicates that a wedding has occurred, a marriage has occurred, and indicates approval. So even if you think that about a cake, there are all kinds of other First Amendment arguments that were actually previewed in this case about, well, even if a cake is a message, whose message is it? Is it the baker's message? The baker wishing you happy birthday when you get a cake? Or is your family wishing you happy birthday when they give you the cake the baker made? These are all things that I think are going to continue to be litigated because they were not resolved in this case. Another piece that I thought was extremely important from Justice Gorsuch was he is very clear that he thinks that you have to look at Jack Phillips, you have to look at the individual vendor, and how does that vendor view his or her production of a product or provision of a service, and that it's really the eye of the beholder. And if Mr. Phillips sees this cake as a same-sex wedding cake, and therefore he can't make it, that's the end of the story, and that's, in his view, what it means to be respectful of religion. Whereas Justice Kagan, you know, in her opinion, and she specifically took on this point of view in a footnote, said, once you are in a public accommodation, we've been really clear that you can't evade the non-discrimination law simply because your religion disapproves of people or certain customers. The public accommodations laws mean that you can't discriminate against classes of people. You can decide what you're going to make. And this is, of course, something the ACLU said often. You can decide what you're going to make, but once you decide to make wedding cakes, you've got to make them available consistent with the anti-discrimination law. So that was some of the back and forth between them. Gary, do you want to weigh on that?
Well, we just say Justice Ginsburg in her dissent also weighed in on this point, and she tried to explain the difference where you take Justice Gorsuch saying these cases are legally the same. The bakers who wouldn't bake the anti-gay case wouldn't make them for anybody, but also Jack Phillips wouldn't make a same-sex wedding cake for anybody. And the way Justice Ginsburg came at that was to say, look, if you change the gender of one of the parties to this gay couple or their sexual orientation, they would get the cake. If you change the religion of the guy who came in for the anti-gay case, he still wouldn't get the cake because the objection was to the messages on the cake. And so she was, so it's another way of looking at why they aren't the same.
Some people ask, what does this all mean for the future? Does this mean that right now someone could use his or her religious beliefs in a state with an anti-discrimination law to refuse goods and service? And there's nothing in this opinion that supports that view, in that majority opinion. So it could happen, and you should obviously contact organizations like ours if this kind of thing comes up, but I don't see support for that in this majority opinion at all. Having said that, it is also true, as some other folks noted, that people on the right are ecstatic about this. The baker won. His religious views are respected. And I think part of why, his point of view was respected in the end, that he doesn't have to make this cake because the commission, not the couple, but the commission in the court's view messed up. But I think the other reason that some of the people on the right wing are excited is because they're in this for the long haul. And you don't necessarily win everything in your first case. And I think they have a vision where you can build on some of the statements from the court that, well, maybe this cake is expressive. It's the expression of Phillips, and it would be understood as the expression of Phillips. You know, looking at things like Justice Gorsuch said about you have to look to every individual about religious expression, and that essentially would provide an individual veto over anti-discrimination laws or, frankly, any law one didn't like. And, you know, they're in this for the long game, and I think there will be a lot more litigation. So as much as yesterday was a bit of a relief, and the court also just did so much, as Gary noted, to affirm anti-discrimination laws, it's also really clear that this is not over. Far from it. And in fact, if anything, I think some people feel pretty emboldened. And I would just note quickly that following on that, that some people asked about other cases in the pipeline. And there's a case involving a florist out of the state of Washington, which again held for the same-sex couple. The florist denied her services to, you know, provide floral arrangements for their wedding. And they had a long-term relationship with her, 16 years. In that case, is being considered by the court for review Thursday. And that, I think, will tell us a lot. Will they take the case, or will they just say, we're done with this for now, we want more cases to percolate up? There's also a case that was just argued in the Oregon Court of Appeals involving another bakery. So there are cases in the pipeline, and there are just so many others out there. And again, we're all talking about cases in states with anti-discrimination laws. And unfortunately, it is still a situation that in the majority of states, we do not have explicit sexual orientation and gender identity non-discrimination protections. So it's not going to be that hard to pick off or to try to, you know, generate issues in states with anti-discrimination laws. Let me stop there. Gary?
I had a couple of questions. What if there had been no quote-unquote misbehavior by the Colorado Commission here, such that issue weren't in the case and they had to address the merits? What would happen? to me is clear from this opinion and the various concurring and dissenting opinions, they both would be very close. My guess is that the baker would lose because I think the cake said nothing. And I don't think Justice Kennedy would be open to a victory for a baker for a simple, basic wedding cake. I think he would be open to a victory for something that was more specifically messaged. He clearly, to me, signaled, and it's kind of ironic because he loves his flowery language, but one of the things he talked about, either in Windsor or Obergefell, about the Constitution lives to the day when you see the things that you never realized were wrong are wrong. And he makes a similar comment here in the opinion saying, well, you know, no one would have thought that a cake could be expressive conduct, but interesting how times and context teaches you new things and makes the Constitution richer. I mean, I think he's definitely intrigued by this question and that possibility. At the same time, I think the court is sending a strong signal. Again, we have Alito and Roberts shining on to an opinion that basically says, wait a second, there have to be clear boundaries to this. And so do I think that someday an artist is maybe going to win one of these cases? I think it's possible. I think Chief Justice Roberts will never go further than the actual precise facts in front of him, which is what infuriated Thomas and Gorsuch in the playground paving case last year. But I think there's a possibility that they could win something that we're not going to win an absolute ruling that never can someone be exempted based upon some kind of compelled speech argument. And I think if Justice Kennedy is gone, I think it becomes even dicier, but I still think we can mostly prevail.
And just to follow up briefly on that, agreeing with everything Gary just said, I do think it's possible to be a win down the future. However, I just want to point out that, for example, at one point Justice Kennedy distinguished a clergy person on the one hand and his or her free exercise of religion in terms of refusing to marry a couple outside of their faith, and on the other hand, a business person who, if unconstrained, could deny anything having to do that supported a quote-unquote gay marriage. And once we open that door, and this is again part of why we have some significant hope that the future will be okay, is that once you start opening that door to individual evaluations of what their religion requires and so on, you really knock out anti-discrimination laws altogether. I mean, the holes become gaping. And the court did refer, in contrast to the clergy example, that you would need to have a constrained approach to whenever it is that there is a claim that would succeed against generally applicable anti-discrimination law. And as Gary says, the court was very concerned about stigma, about dignity, about equal respect, and it was as passionate about that language as for LGBT people as it was about the religion piece.
Listen to this quote. I mean, this is signed on by 6 justices and certainly the 2 dissenters would agree. After making the point about clergy, Justice Kennedy says, yet, if that exception were not confined, then a long list of persons who provide goods and services for marriage and weddings might refuse to do so for gay persons, thus resulting in a community-wide stigma inconsistent with the history and dynamics of civil rights laws that ensure equal access to goods, services, and public accommodations. A very, very strong statement.
Exactly. So, there you have it. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much, Mary and Gary, and thank you, everyone, for joining us on this call. As Mary said, if you do experience or encounter discrimination, feel free to get in touch with us